Welcome to SCOTUSCast, Retroactive Application of Sex Offender Registration and Notification Requirements Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On October 3, 2011, the Supreme Court heard the oral argument in Reynolds v. United States. The question in this case is whether a sex offender who was convicted before the passage of the Sex Offender Registration and Notification Act has the standing to challenge the Attorney General's interim rule, making the act applicable to those who committed offenses before its enactment date. To discuss the case, we have Michael Dubow, who is a professor at the Samford University Cumberland School of Law. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Dubow.
The Supreme Court recently heard oral argument in the case of Reynolds v. the United States. The case involves the Sex Offender Registration and Notification Act, which was passed by Congress and became law in 2006. Even a quick look at this case makes it plain that SORNA, as it's called, is a very poorly drafted statute, so poorly drafted that it may be read to raise significant constitutional questions, particularly involving delegation and separation of powers principles, questions which the court presumably is going to prefer to avoid in deciding this case. But I guess I'm getting a little ahead of myself. First, the facts of the case. The petitioner, Billy Joe Reynolds, was convicted of a sex crime in Missouri in 2001, 5 years before the passage of the Sex Offender Registration and Notification Act, and he was imprisoned for 4 years from 2001 until 2005 in the state of Missouri. Following his release from prison, Reynolds registered with the state of Missouri as required by the state's law at that time. After the passage of the Federal Sex Offender Registration and Notification Act, in September 2007, Reynolds traveled to Pennsylvania but did not register there as a sex offender. 29 days after arriving in Pennsylvania, Reynolds was indicted by a federal grand jury in the Western District of Pennsylvania for failure to register under SORNA. At this stage of the litigation, Reynolds has raised a number of constitutional challenges to the act as applied to him. The issue that the Supreme Court has agreed to decide, though, is a narrow one of standing. The question is whether Reynolds has standing under SORNA to raise claims concerning the Attorney General's interim rule by which pre-2006 convicted sex offenders were added to the ambit of SORNA or not. So the case can be characterized as a standing case. But to answer the question of whether or not Reynolds has standing, that is, does he have a stake in the outcome of this issue, gets us into a very complex question of statutory construction with regard to SORNA. The difficulty is that SORNA does not clearly, by its terms, subject people like Mr. Reynolds, who was convicted prior to 2006, to its registration requirements. The government takes the position, and it's a position that was adopted by the Third Circuit, from which Reynolds is heard, that the act does, in fact, by its terms, subject offenders like Reynolds to the registration requirements of SORNA. The difficulty with this argument stems from the act's definition of sex offender as an individual who was convicted of a sex offense. The definition doesn't provide any sort of reference to a time frame. The effective date of the statute is set out in terms of 3 years. The requirements that are imposed on states under the Act to come into compliance with the reporting system requirements are expressed in terms of the number of years after the date of the enactment of the statute. So there isn't a clear requirement that people such as Reynolds, who were convicted of their crime prior to 2006, are within the statute. The provision in Title 18 that was added by SORNA for failure to register simply refers to whoever is required to register under SORNA without any further elaboration. So the position taken by Reynolds is that the act by itself does not require people like him to register, and that the provision in the act which empowers the Attorney General to adopt rules for the implementation of various terms of the Act, in particular, Section 16913 of Title 42, provides that the Attorney General shall have the authority to specify the applicability of the requirements of this subchapter to sex offenders convicted before the enactment of this chapter or its implementation in a particular jurisdiction, and to prescribe rules for the registration of any such sex offenders and for other categories of sex offenders who are unable to comply with subsection B. Now, subsection B involves the initial registration of sex offenders, whereas subsection C requires sex offenders to keep their registration current. So, just to recap that point, subsection D empowers the Attorney General to specify the applicability of the requirements of SORNA to sex offenders convicted before the enactment of this chapter. Now, read literally, this would involve the delegation to the Attorney General of the question of who is covered by this federal criminal statute. And that's a delegation of authority that was the subject of quite a few questions at oral argument, prompting Justice Scalia to remark that it will be, on this reading, it will be a crime if the Attorney General says so, and it won't be a crime if he doesn't. That's Reynolds' characterization of it and the way that he would like to press the court to consider the, I suppose in a later proceeding, the constitutional arguments against such delegation that he makes. This case will not give the court any occasion to address those broader questions, limited as it is to the standing in construction of 16913. The government's position essentially is that if you take the statement of the Declaration of Purpose in 16901 of Title 42, that Congress, by passing SORNA, wishes to establish a comprehensive national system for the registration of sex offenders. If you take that broad purpose and you couple that with a review of the whole act, look at the skeleton of the entire act, and try to relate this issue brought up by Reynolds' prosecution to the broad purposes of the statute, then certainly people like Reynolds were within Congress's intention to regulate. Furthermore, a narrow reading of 16913 would empower the Attorney General only to regulate the initial registration of offenders. And since Reynolds' problem stems from his failure to keep his registration current, he doesn't have standing then to complain about the rule adopted by the Attorney General. The court likely granted cert in this case, although it's a fairly narrow issue presented, in order to resolve some confusion among the circuits. There appears to have been a decision by the District Court of the District of Columbia in January of 2011, declining to follow at least some of the reasoning that was in the Third Circuit decision in the Shenandoah case, which was relied on by the court in deciding Reynolds. And in addition, after cert was granted in August of this year, the Sixth Circuit also took the opportunity in a case called United States versus Trent to distinguish that case from the reasoning in Shenandoah and declining to follow the lead of the Third Circuit. So this case comes to the court in as part of a sort of long-standing quest on Congress's part to improve the registration of sex offenders in the United States and the litigation that followed therefrom. Reynolds would be the second Supreme Court decision in as many years by the court trying to implement as part of the implementation of SORNA and part of a years-long effort by Congress to improve the national attempt to follow and regulate the activities of sex offenders. It's, I hope, not too much to ask that the drafters of future legislation might take a look at the confusion caused by the lack of clarity in SORNA and also the lack of proper concern for the delegation of what is properly Congress's job to legislate to officers in the executive branch.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.